We're discussing a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel investigation into prenatal care coordination companies operating in Wisconsin. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. For background, prenatal care coordination was added as a Wisconsin Medicaid benefit in 91. Researchers have found over the years in studies on birth outcomes that care coordination and prenatal care services for low-income women improve outcomes while reducing Medicaid costs for newborn medical care. But the journalists uncovered some troubling red flags as taxpayer spending on prenatal care coordination soars, infant mortality rates continue to languish. What was prenatal care like for you? Have you worked with a prenatal coordination provider? How did it go? 800-642-1234. Mary Spicuzza is a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel investigative reporter who worked on the report called Cash, Not Care. Mary, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Well, introduce us, if you will. What type of care is provided by prenatal care coordination companies? What are they?
So prenatal care coordination companies are supposed to provide services to pregnant women and new mothers. It can be providing, they should do a risk assessment to determine whether they're at high risk for a negative birth outcome, a premature birth, complications. They should then kind of come up with a care plan to reduce some of those risks that could be connecting them with jobs or employment opportunities, housing stability, nutrition education. Kind of almost think of them as traffic cops who should be helping women along and helping them find the services that they need to have a healthy baby and a healthy pregnancy.
The word navigator would come to mind for me.
Yes, yes, exactly. That's probably a better word.
So, go ahead, Mary.
So this actually started, this was a tip that we had gotten a while back about one specific coordinator and one specific agency where women said that she was not providing them services, she said, oh, if you give me some money to help you find housing, I'll help you do that. And that we found a group of women who said they weren't given services and that this certain care coordinator kept their money and never found them the stable housing that they were hoping for. So it's one of those where it's like started smaller and rippled out from there, if that makes sense.
Do these companies operate in multiple states? What did you find with these businesses?
You know, we're looking into other states as well. This really seemed to be a lot of the companies, the private companies in Wisconsin are in the Milwaukee area. Which would make sense because Milwaukee has had, you know, historically had problems with high infant mortality. We were surprised at how many companies were operating and how many companies were applying to become Medicaid, you know, to become enrolled in the Medicaid program, just skyrocketing numbers where it had increased. I think it said, I want to say 400% of just this slew of applications where I think it was close to 160 applications just last year alone. So that kind of thing where it's a rapid increase. And some of our sources said, you know, people used to open daycares and then there was our colleagues' investigation into daycares. And then a lot of people have opened PNCCs. And so some kind of see it as a way to make a lot of Medicaid money.
Are there any licensing or regulatory aspects that these firms need to comply with to be in business?
So basically, in order to be approved, a group has to have a what's known as a qualified provider, be a nurse, a registered nurse, there are certain qualifications that someone has to have. They have to have an employee. It doesn't have to be the owner of the company. And we're looking into some of them about kind of what involvement some of these qualified providers actually have and how involved they are in care. But it isn't really a high threshold. It can be a group that says they're a community-focused group or a community health group. But some of the groups that we looked at and wrote about in the story, you know, it was when they filed their paperwork for their nonprofit, it is one person with all of the oversight. They're the only board member, the CEO, the founder, controlling, you know, $1 million a year budget. And one person, another founder that we looked at, was making about 42% of the Medicaid money in a year was given, going just to her salary alone. So for a $560,000 operation in 1 year, about over $200,000 was going to her salary. So that sort of thing, those are kind of the flags or raise questions, I guess we should say.
We're talking with investigative reporter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Mary Spacuzza, worked with a team to investigate prenatal care coordination companies in Wisconsin and what she found. You can join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. That's just what is striking to me, is just the amount of money flowing into these firms, into this industry, if you will. You found that four of the largest prenatal care coordination companies in Wisconsin received $6 million in Medicaid payments in the first 10 months of 2021. Can you put that into perspective for us?
It's, you know, obviously it's a lot of money. A lot of these were very new groups that kind of were created and very, very quickly ramped up of, you know, serving many, many clients and making a lot of money. They do not seem to, from what we could tell from the state, they don't necessarily even report birth outcomes. So which could be, you know, one way to measure success or how successful a group would be what was the birth outcome of the people that you say you're serving as your clients. So that sort of thing, where it just raises a lot of questions about what services are companies like this providing, and how is their success being measured, and how is that being monitored?
When you uncovered these details, what did the state health department tell you about this segment of the industry and prenatal care?
They talked about how when they do see somebody that they have concerns about, they refer them to the Department of Justice. There's a Medicaid fraud unit there. They said that doesn't, when they see fraud, or suspected fraud, they do report it and investigate it. They did say that ending infant mortality in the state, especially Wisconsin, is known for its high rate of Black infant mortality in Milwaukee and in Wisconsin, that is a priority for them. As I would hope anyone wants to end infant mortality, Black infant mortality. I think they're looking at some, they're revising some of their audit procedures after a lawsuit that overhauled how they can do audits. I think that there are just generally concerns among some of the community members that we talked to of, are there improvements that could be made to make sure that the women who need help are getting help, and that this money isn't being spent for other purposes. And that was something that we talked to from quite a few health advocates, members of the community, and clients who said, I signed up, they got my Medicaid information, and then it was really hard to reach a care coordinator, or then they dropped off some diapers for me, but I never heard from them other than that. That sort of thing that we're looking into of, are these women really getting the care that they need, and the care that will help prevent babies from dying?
Milwaukee Journal Sentinel investigative reporter Mary Spacuzza sharing her reporting on the prenatal care coordination industry in Wisconsin and what her and her colleagues discovered. Do you own a prenatal care services company? How does the suspected fraud impact your business? Did you recently give birth? What kind of support systems are you looking for? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Mary Spacuzza here on the Ideas Network. We're looking into prenatal care coordination and a report that dug into the industry in Wisconsin on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is a Medicaid and Badger Care Plus benefit that helps pregnant people get the support and services they need to have a healthy baby. And according to the State Health Department, this wraparound care is for people who are considered high risk for adverse pregnancy outcomes. Milwaukee Journal Sentinel investigation found this industry is really exploding with evidence of fraud. Do you work in healthcare? What has your practice done to ensure equitable care for pregnant people? Have you made a referral to a prenatal care coordination provider? 800-642-1234. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel investigative journalist Mary Spicuzza with us for about 9 more minutes. Mary, you highlighted this a little bit before, but I just want to make it very clear. Milwaukee's Black infant mortality rate in particular, how many Black babies are dying compared to children of other races or ethnicities?
About, if you do a comparison of Black infant mortality and white infant mortality, it's about 3 times more likely that a Black baby will die before its first birthday.
Has that number changed at all over the years?
That disparity, unfortunately, has really lingered for decades, and it's varied slightly. Even if infant mortality overall improves, when you look at the disparity, it's still about 3 times. So obviously, an unacceptable number that I think hopefully everyone wants to see decrease.
And make some connections here for us. How does the overpayment of these companies affect a mother seeking care and potentially affect birth outcomes?
Well, my superstar reporter colleague, Carrie Spivak, and I asked that question a lot about what effect does this have. And one of the experts that we talked to said, somebody might just think, oh, well, I'm getting government overpayments, but that is then money that if somebody's spending that money inappropriately, that's money that doesn't go to an at-risk woman or a at-risk baby who was just born. And those are really important services that there's a reason all this money is being spent, is that women do need help. There are women who are at risk of having a miscarriage, having a preterm birth, which is much more likely to have a negative outcome for that child. So that's care, that money that might, any money that's misspent is money that's not going into going to a family in need.
My guess is, too, that a firm that's been in business for quite some time, maybe decades, has more, is better equipped to help these people going through their pregnancy. That if you are a pop-up business and you don't have any type of track record of doing this type of work, that your outcomes might not be as good as a company that's been doing this for a while.
There is something to be said for institutional knowledge. I don't think anybody is against entrepreneurship in Milwaukee. I do think the flurry of new companies opening by the dozens, again, raises questions of who's keeping an eye on what they're doing, what services they're providing, that sort of thing.
Mary Spicuzza with us, investigative reporter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. She worked on this investigation of prenatal care companies in Wisconsin. And you can share your insights on these firms or how your prenatal care was. Did you have a type of navigator and have a resource to go through the process? 800-642-1234. What was the response from these prenatal care coordination companies around the state that you talked with in terms of what you found?
We're still doing interviews and talking to people and trying to talk to prenatal care coordination companies that are doing the right thing and are trying to combat fraud. I don't think anybody who does this work for, who's made this their life's work, wants to see money being misspent. So we're continuing to do our reporting, and would love to hear from people, obviously, if they have some insight into this. I do think there were, you know, some of the companies we talked to when we asked about some of the Facebook posts about, you know, stacks of cash or designer clothing. One of the women who ran a company just said, it's our money. We run a business and it's, you know, it's our choice to see how we spend it. And clearly, I think any business owner who makes money, that is true. I think the question for the state investigators are, was that money made appropriately, or was there fraud going on in some of these cases of people who are making a lot of money?
Mary, how do pregnant people decide which firm, if they're available, to be able to have this type of, you know, this type of service in the pregnancy? How does a pregnant person decide which firm to go with?
Sometimes they can be referred by a healthcare provider or a hospital if they're a new mom. There are all kinds of referrals, but we have heard that some of the new agencies, especially that were growing very, very quickly, were really, really recruiting. And that could be going on Facebook and saying, if you sign up with my agency, you will have prizes or raffle or gift cards or money. And that is one of the other things that the state is looking into and the state investigators are looking into. And we saw on Facebook quite a bit you should not pay someone to sign up for Medicaid, for a Medicaid provided service, that you shouldn't be basically giving money to get someone's Medicaid card in order to enroll them so you can make money off of them. I don't think anybody would object to somebody helping out a new mom with diapers when they're needed, but you know, offering hundreds of dollars in incentives to get somebody to give them, you know, share their Medicaid number so you can start billing Medicaid for them raises concerns and is not something the state wants to see happen.
You're not seeing this uniformly, though, because as you mentioned, you know, there are companies who are doing this work and who are doing it above board. This is not a sweeping aspect of the industry.
You know, I think we certainly did not see every prenatal care coordinator in the state offering cash incentives. We did not, we did not see negative audits of all of them. So no, we certainly don't want to imply that, that this is 100% of money spent on prenatal care coordination is going to fraud. I think it's more questions of how widespread are these problems versus trying to imply that anyone doing prenatal care is somehow engaging in fraud.
What are the next steps for you and your team? I understand you started this investigation in 2019.
Yeah, we first got this tip in 2019. We haven't been Carrie Spivak and I, my reporting partner, haven't been working nonstop on it. Obviously, we had the pandemic hit and we're held kind of all hands on deck at the paper helping with that. We did revisit it and wanted to get it across the finish line. Obviously, it's a really important topic and something that we think that people should be aware of. And I think we'll be working on some follow-up stories. We'd love to, you know, hear from you, hear from your listeners about what they're hearing on this. But stay tuned. I think we'll have some more stories coming.
Well, it's interesting, too, because starting the project years ago, that gives you some time and space to just watch and linger, if you will, in the industry to find out really what's going on a little bit more and to look more closely at these nuances and that maybe not pop up at any given time.
Right. And we actually talked to one of the women we quoted in the article, Bria Grant, who's trying to create a community hub model and looking at people who are trying to look at how this work could be done differently, how to improve communication between agencies so places aren't billing for the same client, for example, which was something we saw a lot of. How do so many agencies or companies have one person's Medicaid information and are all billing for them as clients. trying to improve trainings to make sure that care coordinators are providing the care that they should be, broadening things out, trying to create a more kind of holistic approach where you can look at everything from, are you in a house that has lead paint, or should you have a lead filter? Should you have that sort of thing? So it's not just kind of silos, I guess, but mm-hmm. a more holistic approach to healthcare. So that was something that was interesting that we were not aware of at first when we just heard complaints about one agency, but being able to come back to it helped us kind of see it from a bigger picture.
Mary, thank you for joining us. Thank you for sharing your work.
Thanks so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Mary Spicuzza, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel investigative reporter. We have a link to the piece called Cash, Not Care. It's at WPR.org/mornings. Stay with us. News update is next here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about how to reduce health disparities for birthing people on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Wisconsin continues to have one of the nation's worst records for Black infant mortality, a troubling rate that has barely budged. That is from March of Dimes Parastats. The CDC says Black people are 3 times more likely to die in childbirth-related complications compared to their white counterparts. Do you work with expectant people? What concerns do you have about medical care and birth outcomes, especially for high-risk people? Where are the gaps? 800-642-1234. Tiffany Green is an assistant professor in the Departments of Population Health Sciences and Obstetrics and Gynecology at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Tiffany, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's a simple but complex question all at once. What does good prenatal care look like?
You know, that's a really hard question. And I think that, first of all, you know, there are certain, you know, baseline standards. Is the doctor board certified? Are you having care in a reputable facility? But beyond that, you need someone who is going to listen to your concerns. It doesn't matter how many board certifications or accolades a doctor or a nurse midwife or other prenatal care provider might have. If they're not listening to you and your concerns, they're not the right provider for you.
We've heard listening as one of a big issues with bias happening in medical care, in healthcare. How big of an issue is this in obstetrics?
You know, it's hard to say. I mean, I think we've had a lot of legislation and other attention placed to implicit bias in healthcare. But the reality is, we don't fully know what the contribution of implicit bias is to obstetric outcomes. What we do know is that there are some very clear examples of racial stereotyping in obstetrics care. For example, the VBAC calculator, the vaginal birth after C-section calculator, embedded race and ethnicity into the calculator and basically downgraded Black and or Hispanic birthing people from having a successful vaginal birth after a first C-section. And thankfully, the Society for Maternal and Fetal Medicine has removed that from the VBAC calculator. So it'll be interesting to see how things change once this is implemented more widely.
Okay, so, you know, you mentioned their doctor's visits and the credibility of the physician, the attending physician to that pregnancy, but there are gaps here. Why don't OBGYN specialists fill the gap for prenatal care services that pregnant people are needing?
So I think it's really important to think about not individuals, but systems. I will admit my bias is to think about things in terms of systems rather than individuals. Mm-hmm. And the reality is doctors and even nurse midwives, right? They're constrained by systems that say you need to see as many patients as possible, right? To maximize profits. And that means they don't have as much time to spend with patients. There are other models of prenatal care, like group prenatal care, that have pregnant people come together to provide support for each other, to learn from each other. But that's not an option that's always right for all pregnant people. It certainly wasn't for me. So I think we should not necessarily expect OB-GYNs, family medicine practitioners, nurse midwives. All, we shouldn't expect them to do everything and all things, but we should strive to have a more integrated system of care so that people can get the care that they need from birth to the end of the life course.
And I think that integration, helped me understand this. Integration has to happen in healthcare itself, because OBGYNs need to work with midwives, need to work with nurse practitioners, that there can be different modes of care for this pregnancy.
Absolutely. I think the other thing that people need to understand is that you don't necessarily deliver with the obstetrician or nurse midwife that you see during your pregnancy. I was very fortunate that I delivered with the same doctor that I had prenatal care with, but that's certainly not the case for everyone. And although a lot of practices will have you see different OB-GYNs or nurse midwives so that you can be familiar with everyone, I think the system of care is such that it's hard to maybe deliver with someone that you may not have even seen before you deliver. That's really problematic. I think that other specialties like family medicine often have a situation where you can follow someone throughout the pregnancy, but that's not always the case either. So I think it's really important for people to understand that our system of care is really disjointed, and it will take, I think, a really active effort from all of us to make sure that that care is integrated. It's not just reproductive health care, it's all kinds of care, cancer care, regular primary care. If we go to different facilities, the medical records don't automatically transfer. So I think these are really important things to think about when we're talking about not just the integration of reproductive health care, but all of our health care, as you mentioned.
It's not just data there, it's the relationships. My second birth, you know, it happened in the middle of the night. It's whoever is attending in the middle of the night. I didn't know the obstetrician. I'd never seen the person. The birth was fine, but it is an example where I had no rapport with this person. They just swooped in and delivered a baby.
Yeah, that's really tough. I feel, like I said, I feel very fortunate that the same doctor delivered both of my children that I saw for prenatal care. We had a relationship of trust, and that was really important.
What is the role of doulas? Doulas have the ability and to accompany the pregnant person throughout the healthcare process, a doula not providing medical care or delivering the baby, but, you know, neither do prenatal care coordinators. What do you see here?
I think doulas play a really important role. Doulas, people have talked a lot about doulas' ability to help improve birthing outcomes. I think we're still investigating the extent to which they help. But what we know is that Black birthing people in particular, not just Black birthing people, are less likely to have social support throughout pregnancy. And we know that stress is certainly correlated with adverse birth outcomes. So doulas really play, I think, an important role in helping to provide support for birthing people. It's often been a service that has been out of the reach of low-income pregnant people, but now we're seeing more and more push to have doula services covered by Medicaid, and so that all people can have access. I want to be clear, doulas have been put forth as a low-cost solution to some of these birthing inequalities. I think it's really problematic to try to place the weight of the world on doulas, right? Mm. They're not medical professionals. They're not responsible for all that is wrong inside of our systems. But I think they can be part of supporting pregnant and birthing people while we continue to try to improve surrounding systems.
I just also want to give a personal example of doula. I never had one, but I used to live in a city that had a very large people in the military. It was a big base city. And so there are a number of doulas because there are so many deployments that a spouse would be deployed and not be at the birth. And so you saw doulas stepping in to be at the birth. That was one example there.
Yeah, so I think it's really important to acknowledge and to celebrate the role of doulas, but understand that many doulas are burned out, right? Mm. It's just like many other people that are doing care work right now through this pandemic. It's exhausting, right? And we cannot use doulas as a way of putting, it's like trying to, you know, stick your finger, or, you know, stick your hand in the dike, right? Mm-hmm. When, you know, when the whole thing needs to be fixed, right? So it's not their responsibility to do that, but they do play an important role in supporting pregnant and birthing people.
Tiffany Green with us, assistant professor in the Departments of Population Health Sciences and Obstetrics and Gynecology at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, as we look at the support systems around pregnant people and what you have seen through the birthing process. Join in at 800-642-1234. Marcus is joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Marcus. What are your insights?
Hi. So I'm a 42-year-old Caucasian male. I have multiple children with three different women. I have one with the first one, my oldest son, who's 19, is with a Caucasian woman. The second one was with my wife, who now ex-wife, who is Hmong. And then the next couple are with a mixed African-American woman. I noticed I was at the birth of all my children, and I noticed at when she asked, when the African-American mother asked for pain medication or commented on it. Now, mind you, she's studying actively, and at the time she was actively studying to be a nurse at MATC, so she was going through all the classes. I noticed that they were slower to respond to her requests, and I actually even heard one of the nurses say, oh, no, she can take it a little longer now. I don't know if that meant because it was something that I was not understanding about the birthing process, or if it was just, but they just seemed slower to respond to her requests or when I went and requested, even though her insurance was on par with my ex-wife, and my Caucasian child, her mother was on state insurance. So I don't necessarily understand how this works, but I definitely see a disparity.
Marcus, thank you for that personal story. Tiffany, what do you hear there?
So Marcus's experience is actually reflected in the data that we see. There are huge disparities when it comes to treating Black people for pain compared to their white counterparts. As he saw, for example, we see that when we come to treating pain for children and adults, right? There are these pain-related disparities. In some work that I have done with Dr. John Pullman, who's a resident at UW, we also see some greater pain among Black birthing people that have C-sections, but they don't get any more meds. And when we control for pain, they actually get less medication. So what Marcus is saying is very reflective of what we see in the data, these very big disparities in terms of who gets treated for pain and how much.
Is the data shifting at all, may I ask? Do you see any movement there?
Well, we don't know yet.
Okay.
One thing that's really great is there's been a more of a standardized protocol for how pain medication is administered post C-section, and we're really working to find whether that helped to improve these disparities that we see.
UW School of Medicine and Public Health Population Health Scientist Tiffany Green with us studies the causes and consequences of racial ethnic disparities in maternal health outcomes. Did you feel like you had good access to prenatal care? Did you feel heard at your doctor's visits? Did you have childbirth complications like preeclampsia? How was your care? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're at the intersection of social determinants of health and maternal health disparities on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Our country's maternal mortality rates are among the highest in the developing world, and especially among the developed world, and especially high among Black and Native American people. The Biden administration held the first ever White House Maternal Health Day of Action in December. The Build Back Better Act, it includes provisions on improving maternal health. What change do you see happening in your community to support pregnant people, especially people of color? What program do you want to highlight? 800-642-1234. Tiffany Green, an economist and population health scientist, working in this area with us for about 9 more minutes. Let's go to Margaret now in Appleton. Hi, Margaret. What would you like to bring up?
Hi, good morning. I wanted to, just a couple things. One is I had an experience in 2017 with a high-risk pregnancy. I am a white woman. So this is, my experience was that I ended up on bed rest at 21 weeks because it looked like I might go into preterm labor. And I received every single support you could imagine, public and private, including my husband quitting his job to, like, take care of me and our three-year-old at that time. And it made me realize, I don't know if I would have had the same outcome if I, say, had to keep going to work or if we didn't have a good car. So there's so many things that play into a successful birth outcome. And that was a real eye-opener for me, that experience. And my daughter was born 3 days after her due date.
Wow.
So she was not born early. And then the other thing I wanted to say, and this kind of plays into the last one, is I just want to put in a plug for a licensed professional midwives. I lived in Milwaukee for all of my pregnancies and the births of my children. And there are wonderful midwives that have placed themselves down on the south side of Milwaukee, and they accept Badger care. And they, like, the care that I received there, like, my midwife came to my house when I was on bed rest. We did all of my appointments at my house.
Wow.
She, even with my last pregnancy, because my labors are quick, she slept at my house a night because we thought I was in labor, and so she came over. It didn't progress, but she slept in my living room just in case.
Oh, my goodness.
So I also have had a miscarriage, and she picked up her cell phone and talked me through the whole process and let me know when it was time to go to the hospital because it was becoming an unsafe situation. So there are wonderful midwives in this state if people think that could be a possibility for them.
Margaret, remarkable stories. Thank you for sharing. Tiffany, what do you hear there?
Yes, I think that, you know, the caller brought up a really important point, which is that the social determinants of health matter, and sometimes far more than, you know, the medical support that you get. And I want to be clear, I think that proper medical support is really crucial for positive labor and delivery outcomes. But as one of my doctors said to me once, we see pregnant people for such a small portion of their lives, a couple of days, right? But they've been living in these environments for decades, right? So I think it's really important to think about whether people have the right access to proper food, whether they have access to proper housing, whether they have the support that they need, whether they are facing more stress than other people. And we know from the data, again, that Black pregnant people face more stressors due to racism, due to socioeconomic inequality, which is linked to structural racism, as do other groups. And so I think that's a really good point about having the supports needed.
You mentioned things like housing, food, work, and I want to make sure that I get your sense on this. Milwaukee Journal Sentinel investigation found that women were being taken advantage of by these prenatal care coordination companies in Wisconsin using Medicaid to help offset health care costs. What did you see in this investigation?
So I had a chance to scan a few things, and my understanding was that these companies were accessing pregnant people and promising services that were never delivered. And I think that's really pretty problematic and pretty disturbing that would happen. And I think what we're seeing is the fact that people fall through the cracks when it comes to getting care. We know that even if we have presumptive eligibility, which means that you don't have to prove that you are eligible for Medicaid exactly before you get care, Medicaid is associated, or Badger Care is associated with delays in access to care, particularly if people have not already been on Medicaid, right?
Hmm.
And we know that that's associated with delays in access to care. So I can see how these pregnant people might have been more vulnerable to a company that says, hey, we'll take care of you. We will get you the care that you need. And so I think it's really atrocious and really horrific that the company would take advantage of the most vulnerable pregnant, some of the most vulnerable pregnant people in our state.
Tiffany Green with us, assistant professor in the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, as we look at prenatal care and birth outcomes. Your stories, your insights, 800-642-1234. You are part of a pilot program called Connect RX. Can you give us a sense of what this program is about?
I want to say that I was not on the team that won the original grant. I want to give a shout out to the amazing Lisa Payne Care, Gabe Doyle, Robin Langton, and the Dane County Health Council for the work that they have done to get this program off the ground. What I mentioned before, that pregnant people are often at risk for being unhoused, food insecurity, et cetera. What this pilot program is going to do is integrate the social determinants of health with medical care. So for example, if Black pregnant people come and they're screened, they might find that they are at risk for, say, things like food insecurity or not having support. That this program is going to connect them with a community health worker who will support them as they connect to different community agencies that will help support them. For example, doula care or housing related care. And I think it's an incredibly innovative program, a little bit biased, but I think it's an incredibly innovative program that has had agreement and support from a number of health systems. And I think this could really set the standard for how we integrate the social determinants of health with clinical care.
How does a pilot program then become established, become the norm in healthcare, or get become part of the system, if you will?
You know, that's a really good question. We are still about to launch the pilot. And I think, one, it has to show that it's successful, but two, it will require a lot of money. It will require money and investments from health systems to ensure that their patients are getting the best experience possible. It will require coordination across the private sector and the public sector. You know, I think a lot of that is beyond my pay grade about how to make everything work. But we have such amazing people that are leading the charge, and I feel really fortunate to be even playing a small part in this project.
I want to just touch base on one more thing here as we close. The American Congress of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, they continue to project a shortage of thousands upon thousands of OBGYNs in the next two decades. How does that affect care?
Well, I think, as I said before, I think it's what we do need more obstetricians, gynecologists. I'm obviously in an OB-GYN department. But I want to emphasize that OB-GYNs are not necessarily the only ones that can provide high quality care. We need nurse midwives. We actually have, OB-GYN is actually one of the few areas where Black women's representation is just about on par with our representation in the population. Now we need more, as the ACOG has said, but I think we have a really strong deficit when it comes to Black nurse midwives and family practitioners. So in addition to increasing the pipeline in OB-GYN, we need to really increase the pipeline in those other two subspecialties as well. It will require making sure we have holistic medical school admissions for people that have been marginalized, because they will provide a different kind of care.
And Tiffany, we're out of time. Thank you for joining us, Tiffany Green, on the Ideas Network.